Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Sri Bhakti Vedanta ki jai, Gurdwara Raj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Giriraj Maharaj ki jai, Jai Nitai Gopur Manandi. Okay. So we have 8 devotees here. What that? Or 9? We're supposed to be wearing masks, so yeah. Hare Krishna. Welcome, Doctor.
Thank you.
And we're supposed to be 1.5 meters apart, so. Yeah, everyone just stay. Because we have to follow the rules at this point, so let's just follow the rules. So, Mataji's coming as well?
Yeah.
Okay. So, we have, that means 10 devotees here and 3 online that I can see. So, everyone knows the class is on? We sent it out, so. Welcome, Mataji. Thank you for coming.
Thank you, Prabhuji.
Okay. Very good. Okay. So it has been an interesting year for everyone, I think. A little bit different. Than what we're used to. So this is it. And some devotees have been through a lot as well in the last 12 months, I've noticed. A lot of people have been through many things. So, this is the nature of the times that we're in. And you can expect these kind of situations for the next 4 or 5 years. Astrologically, it's there. Actually, next Monday, there's a very powerful astrological configuration. So we'll see what happens next Monday. Everything could be finished. We don't know.
It's getting better and better, isn't it?
No, it's not. It's going to next Monday, there's six planets in one sign, one house, which is very rare. You have that much power at once. So devotees are saying that means it's good for devotees. But for the non-devotees, it's not so good. So keep chanting, please. And study the Bhagavatam. So we'll get back into it. So we're going to go live. So hopefully this will remain steady. I don't want to, back and then forth and back and then forth. So hopefully we'll just stay live. That's the plan, if we can keep the classes live. And for devotees who can't make it, then we'll be online simultaneously. So if you can't make it to the temple, you can still watch. Everything is there. So where we're up to, we're up to the Uddhava Gita, and we're up to chapter 24. So the plan will be to finish canto 11 and canto 12 this year. That will be the plan. And then we pray to Lord Gauranga and to Lord Nityananda Prabhu and to Radha Ballabha Jagannath Balaram Subhadra Giriraj Srila Prabhupada. If it's their desire, then we may begin Chaitanya Charitamrita next year. So we'll see what the Lord desires. So we're up to the Uddhava Gita. Now, we have to understand it in context. At the moment, we're up to chapter 24. And where we've left off is we're up to verse 21. Tonight, we'll finish verses 21 to 29. We'll finish the chapter. So we left off at that place last year, just before Kartik. And this particular chapter is called The Philosophy of Sankhya. Sankhya Yoga. Sankhya Yoga means a deep analytical study. And there is a whole section in the third canto spoken by Kapiladeva, which is a very deep analysis of Sankhya yoga, Sankhya philosophy. And now this is being spoken here. It's not as quite as elaborate as previously, but still it's being spoken very detailed. So the Uddhava Gita, Krishna spoke to Uddhava. Now, who is Uddhava? Right? He's Krishna's cousin. And it's said that in Dwaraka, he is Krishna's, most intimate associate. The only devotees in the creation who are more intimate with Krishna than Uddhava himself, who is outside of Vrindavan in Dwaraka, the only devotees more intimate than Uddhava are the Brijbasis themselves. And that's why we see that Krishna sent Uddhava, if you go back to the 10th canto, Krishna sent Uddhava to Vrindavan. Right? Why? To learn. Because if someone has more love for Krishna or more bhakti, you need to study from that person. You need to learn from that person. So, you know, he's the most exalted devotee. But still more exalted are the Brijbasis. So Krishna sent him for that purpose. Now you can learn from the Brijbasis. You can see what the heights of love are. And when he went there, in particular when he met the gopis, and he spent several months with the gopis, then he realized that his love, compared to theirs, he felt was insignificant. So if you go to Govardhan Hill, if you do Govardhan Parakram, there's a place called Uddhava Kund. You remember that place? Yeah, just before, where is it? On the Parakram.
In the Lalkund in Chakur, or just on the way to Parakram.
Yeah. Yeah, so if you're going doing Parakram around, just before you're entering up to Radhakund, Shyamakund, it's only a kilometre or a few kilometres back, then there is Uddhava Kund. And it's said that actually he is residing there as Kundalata, as a creeper on the banks at that place, because it says that he is hoping that the gopis on their way to Radhakund, Shyamakund, they will trample him with the dust from their lotus feet. And that way he'll become purified. So he's actually taken birth in Braj as a kundalata, a creeper, in order to get the dust of the residents of Vrindavan, the dust of their feet. Because we know the dust of the feet of the devotees is very powerful. So therefore he is taking that position. So he is a disciple of Brihaspati, who is Guru, Jupiter, that planet Jupiter, and is Brihaspati. So he is the disciple, so he's incredibly learned personality, incredible. The word Uddhava literally means like walking festival, like we have Utsava. Uddhava means like one who is, he's such a qualified person. It's like wherever he goes, everyone becomes blissful and ecstatic. It's like there's a festival of Krishna consciousness. It's almost like the only person more qualified than him is Krishna himself. You know, he's like Krishna in so many respects. He's bodily, he was the same color as Krishna's. He looks the same as Krishna. He only wears the clothes which have been worn by Krishna, Krishna's remnants. He only eats the food which has been eaten by Krishna, Krishna's prasad. So in so many ways, he's like Krishna. He's so Krishna conscious. His complexion became the same color as Krishna's just by meditating on Krishna, by Krishna Smarana. Yeah. So he's such a qualified personality. So Uddhava, he wanted to understand the love of the residents of Vrindavan, and Krishna sent him there to Vrindavan. So at this point, this is just before Krishna is leaving the world. So he comes to Krishna, and he says to Krishna, I know that you're going to leave. because there are inauspicious omens in Dwarka. Right? We can see in Dwarka there are problems. So this is inauspicious. It means you are about to leave. He's very intelligent. Krishna said, yes, it is true. But although I'm leaving, I want you to stay. Uddhava said, I want to go with you. Krishna said, no, you have to stay. Because the vani is more important than the babu. The vani is more important than the babu. Even more important than being with Krishna. Krishna is saying, you should stay. That is even more important. So he follows Krishna's instruction. He has to stay. So in order to qualify him or train him, then Krishna speaks the Uddhava Gita, which is what we're studying now. Most of the 11th canto is the Uddhava Gita. So these are Krishna's final instructions to Uddhava before he leaves this world. And then he gives him a mission or a task or a... He instructs him, once I finish instructing you, Krishna travels to many places. From Dwarka, Hastinapur, Mathura, and different places, Mithila. He went to different places. If you look at his journey, he traveled many places in India. One place he did not go was Badrikashram. Badrikashram is up in Himalaya. And there are many great sages there who were devotees of Krishna, but Krishna did not actually go there. So he said to Uddhava, you will go there on my behalf. I will send you there because I will give you these instructions. You will go to the sages. You will teach the sages. You will instruct them on my behalf. And I will give you this knowledge, which I want you to present to them. So this is what's taking place. And then at the end of it, then Krishna instructs you, now you go to the Himalaya, to Badrikashram. So this is the final teaching that Krishna gives. So the Uddhava Gita is incredibly important. Because the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna speaks here, but then the Uddhava Gita is more intimate. Now there's more, Krishna discusses the gopis directly. Right? He discusses more intimate topics, which he does not do in the Bhagavad Gita. The Bhagavad Gita, there's no direct discussion of gopis or anything like that. The residents of Vrindavan, but that's there in the Uddhava Gita. So it's considered to be a very exalted teaching. So then this particular chapter, which we're now in, is describing Sankhya Yoga. Sankhya means, as we know, means analysis. Right? It means the path of defining the difference between matter and spirit, understanding what is matter, what is spirit. That is the Sankhya philosophy. That's the purpose of Sankhya. So he wants to explain the difference between the two. The reason that Krishna spoke the Uddhava Gita is to breed renunciation into Uddhava. He wants to become renounced. It's actually the purpose of the Uddhava Gita is to create the spirit of sannyas. Within the listener, right? Where the mind, the body, and the words will be used in Krishna's service. And I was discussing this with one devotee yesterday. I've noticed that many devotees are going through a lot of problems at the moment, right? And in the last, say, 12 months. Is it a fair statement?
Yes. Yeah. Non-devotees as well.
Yeah, non-devotees as well. Non-devotees, yeah. But I've noticed, because we're kind of more concentrated on the devotees. I've noticed a lot of devotees are going through problems at the last, 12 months. So, yes, sir.
I have one question.
Yeah.
When Lord Krishna sent Uddhava to Badrikashram, did he go to Badrikashram first or he went to Vrindavan first?
No, he went to Vrindavan
first and then the
10th canto, yeah. And then this is after.
Yeah.
This is further.
Yeah.
So many devotees are going through problems. And I was speaking to one devotee yesterday who is actually a close friend of mine, a close devotee, and he's going through some big problems. So if you're not going through big problems at the moment, be a little thankful and a little humble. And just remember, because, you know, you think you have problems. But you don't really have problems compared to other devotees. I can tell you five devotees right now who I know are going through much bigger things than you're going through. Right? So it's like, and I know quite a few devotees are going through very heavy things. Like really heavy things in the last, you know, few months. Yeah. And, you know, for myself, I haven't got very many problems. You know, I have problems, but compared to what's going on, it's not very significant. So I was speaking to one devotee yesterday who's going through quite a testing time and a testing situation. And I said to that devotee, actually, the whole Hare Krishna movement is ultimately it's acting on the platform of sannyas. You know, compared to the outsiders, the non-devotees and so forth, those of us who are married and everything, we're actually sannyasis compared to them. You know, like our mind, our body, our words, to a great degree, are used in Krishna service. That's what sannyas is. So all of us are really, and the outside world looks at us as being sannyasis, even those who are married. You know, we're quite renounced. You know, we give up so many things and we live a very different type of life to the outside world. So the point is, I mean, Bhakti Charuswami said this. He came to Melbourne a number of years ago and he gave a class and he said the purpose of sannyas, because he was a sannyasi, Maharaj was a powerful sannyasi, he said that the purpose of sannyas is to learn the mood of the gopis. The gopi bhav, or the mood that the gopis have in their service to Krishna. Because what do the gopis do? Their body, their mind, their words is in Krishna's service. So what does it mean to take sannyas? It means to learn the mood of the gopis, how the gopis serve. What is really the mood of every devotee in ISKCON? It's to learn to use your body, mind, and words in Krishna's service. So that's what the Uddhava Gita is for. It's to teach you to be a sannyasi. Doesn't mean that you actually become a sannyasi. You know, like Bhanu Swami is arriving tonight. Yeah, so, what's that?
He's already here.
He's up there. Okay, so His Holiness Bhanu Swami is just above us, just up here, I think. No. So, you know, to be a sannyasi, it's not that, you know, how many sannyasis are there? You know, if you're in Australia right now, I think there's only three. Right? Out of all the devotees in Australia, you know, Bhanu Swami's there, Ramaya Swami's there, and Mukunda Maharaj is there. So I think, you know, I don't think there's any other sannyasis in Australia. So out of hundreds, how many devotees are there in Australia? Hundreds, you know, maybe thousands. Or actually, there are thousands of devotees. Right? But only three are sannyasis. So it's not like we will formally necessarily take sannyas. If you can, that's very good. If you can formally become a sannyasi, that's very good. But most of us cannot do that, at least externally. But in the spirit, we should become like that. Body, mind, words, and Krishna's service. So that is the mood of the Uddhava Gita. It is to prepare you, your consciousness, to become fully surrendered to Krishna. So this particular chapter is Sankhya. Sankhya means to analyze. Sannyas means to analyze. What is the difference between matter and spirit? Right. So that's what a sannyasi does. He defines, this is matter, this is spirit. He doesn't become distracted. So it says here that the Uddhava Gita is meant to create that spirit of renunciation. Because Uddhava had to renounce. After he left Krishna, he had to walk to the Himalayas, thousands of kilometers. Right? He had to be very renounced. And the whole time, he was feeling intense separation from Krishna. And then finally, through that intense separation, he entered onto a very deep platform where he began to remember Krishna's pastimes, and then he actually felt union with Krishna, which is what the gopis felt. The gopis felt union with Krishna through separation. This is very advanced, but this is what Uddhava was being taught by Krishna. Okay, so now we'll begin this chapter. So this is chapter... 24, and we're up to verse number 21. So we'll read from 21. Tonight we'll finish the chapter.
Really, I would just ask you.
Yes, Mataji.
The two of us doesn't have Lord Krishna.
Yeah.
And then he was putting on the clothes which was worn by Krishna. He was eating what was eaten by Krishna.
Mm.
So how come there is no description when Lord Krishna was in Vrindavan? He started, this description starts as only when he sent him to see the gopis.
Of Uddhava.
Yeah. There's no description in Bhagavatam.
Not in Bhagavatam, no.
Not in Bhagavatam. How come it's not there?
Because there's only 18,000 verses. So not enough time to say everything.
Yeah.
There's only
7 days.
Only 7 days. Only 7 days to tell the story.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have enough time.
That's true.
If we had 14 days, we could tell some more stories. But there was only 7. So
does it mean that he was not there with him before?
In Vrindavan? No. He only met him in Mathura.
Mathura and
Vrindavan.
Yeah, but he'd never been to Vrindavan before Krishna sent him. He was a Yadu. The others lived in Mathura. They didn't spend time in Vrindavan. So. Well, he met him in Mathura. But then the Brahmara Gita, I would imagine he sent him from Mathura to Vrindavan. Because, that's just across. So I would imagine that he's gone from there. So. Krishna was in Mathura for how long?
18.
How long?
18.
Yeah, 18 years. 18 years. So in that time, I think that's when he went across to.
He was in Dwarka when he sent him to see the gopis?
I don't think so. I think it would have been from Mathura. Okay. So tonight we'll go from verses 21 to 29 in the philosophy of Sankhya, text number... chapter 24. I am the basis of the universal form, which displays endless variety through the repeated creation, maintenance, and destruction of the planetary systems. Originally, containing within itself all planets in their dormant state, my universal form manifests the varieties of created existence by arranging the coordinated combination of the five elements. So, Mahaprabhu, would you like to read the... No, it's okay. That's not... No, it's okay. It's okay. Okay.
Sorry.
That's okay. We could have got someone else to do it, but it's okay. So, 21, purple.
Translation?
Purport.
According to Srila Swami, the word Maya refers to the Lord in His form at eternal time.
Thank you. Any points there? Yeah, so this is Kala Shakti. In the introduction to the Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada explains there are 5 subject matters in the Gita. What are those 5 subject matters? Ishvara.
Jiva.
Jiva. Prakriti.
Kala.
Karma. Okay, so Kala is one of the 5 subject matters of the Gita. So this is referring to Kala Shakti. As Krishna says later in the Gita, Kala Smi, I am time. I am time. The time factor. And Krishna says, I have come to devour all the worlds. So everything is being destroyed by the time factor. The time factor destroys everything. And we're all being destroyed by time. Just like my mother turned 70 on Saturday. So I went to see her for her birthday. And she said, I'm in the last quarter. Like in a football game, you have four quarters. She said, I am in the last quarter. That's time. Time is taking everything. So that is the nature of the material world. Everything will be destroyed by Kala Shakti. So Krishna said, I am time, meaning that it is his Shakti. And everything will be destroyed in due course. So when we understand this, we understand that everything in the material world is temporary. So when you understand everything is temporary, right? And as devotees, we understand this to a great degree, right? Things are temporary, right? Just like, you know, sometimes we're still attached to this material world, right? Hands up if you're still attached. Okay. So we're still attached to this material world. So because we're still attached, sometimes we're fearful that things will be taken away from us. But because we're devotees, there's some tempering or some understanding that actually we know everything's going to end anyway. So we don't get as bewildered as the non-devotees. Or at least we should not be as bewildered as the non-devotees. Just like a couple of years ago, Venugopal Prabhu passed away. Remember him? Venugopal Prabhu?
Yeah.
Up in Mawalambai, his Prabhupada disciple. So he had no fear. Right? He was completely surrendered to Krishna. Yeah? So he didn't have any fear of death. Because he understands everything is temporary. He's realized the knowledge. So when you get to that platform, then there is no fear for the devotee. Because we know everything in this material world is temporary. So when you understand the nature of this Kala Shakti, the time factor, you understand everything will be taken away in due course of time. Everything is temporary in this material world. So devotees are not so attached. Not like the non-devotees. They have higher knowledge. You know, we're somewhere in between. Right? We're still attached, but we also understand this philosophy of detachment. So devotees don't become so disturbed by these things. So, any points here? Okay. So I'll read verses 22 through 27.
Excuse me.
Yes, sir.
If we are not attached, then why should we be afraid?
Well, that comes down to what we call realization. When you have realization, then you're not afraid. But if you don't have realization, then you become afraid. So we have to see how much realization is. Okay. At the time of annihilation, the mortal body of the living being becomes merged into food. Food merges into the grains. And the grains merge back into the earth. The earth merges into its subtle sensation, fragrance. Fragrance merges into water, and water further merges into its own quality, taste. That taste merges into fire, which merges into form. Form merges into touch, and touch merges into ether. Ether finally merges into the sensation of sound. The senses all merge into their own origins, the presiding demigods, and they, O gentle Uddhava, merge into the controlling mind, which itself merges into false ego in the mode of goodness. Sound becomes one with false ego in the mode of ignorance, and all-powerful false ego, the first of all the physical elements, merges into the total nature. The total material nature, the primary repository of the three basic modes, dissolves into the modes. These modes of nature then merge into the unmanifest form of nature And that unmanifest form merges into time. Time merges into the Supreme Lord, present in the form of the omniscient Mahapurusha, the original activator of all living beings. That origin of all living, of all life, merges into me, the unborn Supreme Soul, who remains alone, established within himself. It is from him that all creation and annihilation are manifested. So, Yogi, you'd like to read the purport?
The inhalation of the material world is the reversal of the process of creation, and ultimately everything is merged to the rest, to rest within the Supreme Lord, who remains full in his absolute position.
Very good. So what are the points here in this section?
Everything comes from God and goes into you.
Mm. Good point. What else?
It's an important other point, you know, which is basically even if the Lord sort of replicates himself where everything sort of in the end comes and is still the complete whole.
Mm. Nice point. Anything else? Good. Anything else? Mm. So this is the reversal of creation. We hear, particularly in the third canon, the elaborate description of how everything manifests. And now this is like the reversal. This is how it all takes place. So everything manifests and then it all comes back. So when it manifests, this whole world is created from the pradhan. The pradhan means the unmanifest material energy. And then when the Lord glances into it, as we've heard in the Brahma Samhita and the Bhagavatam, he glances into it and then everything manifests. And then when it's all manifest, there are all the different elements and all the different forms manifest. Now, when you're leaving the material world and you're going back to the spiritual world, you have to pass through the different layers of the material universe. As you pass through the different layers of the material universe, I've explained this before, you become tested. Right? So the first layer is the earth layer. So you pass back through that. And then what is that full of? Right? Fragrances. So you hear all these, you experience all these divine fragrances. You have to pass through that. Right? And then you get to the water. And then when you go through the water element, then what do you experience? Right, the taste, all the different tastes. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says the tongue is the most voracious, so that's very difficult. Because then you're offered pizza and... Yeah, that's usually enough for most devotees. You know, if you want to derail a devotee, right, devotee's going somewhere and you say, oh, Prabhu, just come, I'll give you some pizza. And they're like, let's go. So you're trying to go back to Krishna, then now you have to all the tastes that are available. And then you go through the fire element, and then all the, what happens in the form, all the sights, right? All the things that attract you in this material world, you see that. Right? And then you go back through the air element, and then
touch.
Sparshabhoga. Sparshabhoga is very powerful, you know, the sense of touch. No, we're very attached to touching things. Right? So that sparshabhoga is very powerful. You have to go back through that. And then ether.
Sound.
Yeah, the sound. Then you get all the sound. Kavitam sundarim. You know, all the beautiful words of the opposite sex. And, you know, it's very distracting. And then you go through. Well, then the mind. The mind's very difficult to battle with. We have to deal with our mind every day. Right? And then your intelligence. Prabhupada actually says in Gita that intelligence is the capital of lust. Intelligence makes all the ideas how to enjoy separately from Krishna. And then through ego, right, which is the biggest covering, you have to go through the ego, and that's very difficult to give up. It's very difficult to give up our ego. People are very egotistical, always think they are right, even when they are wrong. This is false ego. Very difficult. And then you have to go through that. So it's not easy to get out of the material world. So this means as you travel through the different elements, you have to experience the different temptations which are there. So when this material world becomes manifest, then all of those things are here in this world. Right, the sights, the sounds, all of these different things are in the material world. And every day we have to battle with them, actually. Just like in the sixth canto, we have the pastime of Ajamyo. So it said that once in his life, he saw the Sudra and the Sudrani embracing, right, engaging in sex life. Right? So he was a brahmana. Right? He was living in a previous yuga, previous time, and then he saw, you know, men and women embracing, engaged in sex life, you know, by the side of the road, like in the ditch. And then it left such a samskara, such an impression on his consciousness, that then it derailed him from his spiritual life, his brahminical ways. And then he actually became like a dacoit, a thief, and did all sorts of impious things, and could not control his sex life, and so many problems arose. So Prabhupada points out, he only saw that once. We see that every day. Right? He only saw it once. Right? Every day we see that. You know, you live here in Australia, you know, the billboards and so many things. It's there. So all this distraction is there. So these are the things which are keeping us away from Krishna. Right? All these different sense objects. They distract us from our devotional service. Then when you try to leave this material world, you have to get tested by all of them as you go back to Krishna. Make sure you're not attached to anything in this material world. So here it describes the reversal of the creation. First it describes how everything manifests, then describes how everything is wound up. So it is pointed out that Krishna is changeless. The spiritual world is changeless. Everything in this material world changes. And we're very attached to this particular lifetime. You're attached to your children, which is natural, right? Attached to your husband or your wife, which is natural. But this is just one lifetime. Just like a few years ago, my father left this world. And, you know, in many ways, he was impious. So I did not associate with him very much. After I became a devotee for 20 years, I did not associate with him very much. And then when he left this world, it was very painful for me because, you know, I felt like, oh, you know, we did not associate and, you know, I lost my father and we didn't, you know, like, so there's some pain there. And then I was struggling with that, you know, that pain which was there. And then Burujan Prabhu, he said, don't let one father in one lifetime destroy your chance for becoming Krishna conscious. It was very powerful, actually. It had a big effect on me. Don't let one father, just in one lifetime. So we have to see things in perspective. We put all the emphasis on this one lifetime. This is only one lifetime. And we've had so many. Imagine if you went back 100 lifetimes and saw your family. Maybe you were a cockroach. And then you saw, you know, you had your little family. You know, and that pastime with Indra. Indra became the pig. And then what happened to Indra? Hmm. Yeah, it became attached. Or here's my wife, here's my kids. You know, I'm not leaving them. And Brahma said, what are you talking about? He said, don't you understand who you actually are? And so he came back to be Indra. But Indra is not who he is either. All of these lifetimes are temporary. That's what this philosophy is teaching us. It's what Krishna is trying to teach Uddhava. This is all just temporary. So we have to have a balance, because we are attached, but it has to be balanced, not too attached. Prabhupada actually said that about grihastha life. He said, with the husband and wife, not too much attachment, not too much detachment. That's actually the right balance. Now, you can't be too attached, but you can't be too detached either. Right? You have to have that proper balance. Because the relationship between the husband and wife, it is temporary. So don't be too attached. Right? But then at the same time, don't be too detached either, because that's not healthy. Right? So this is what Uddhava is teaching. This is what Krishna is teaching here in the Uddhava Gita, to have that balance. So Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur says in his commentary on this verse that the jiva is kept away from Krishna because of his desire for karma and jnana. When karma and jnana too much overpower our bhakti, we can't serve Krishna properly. You can't actually become a devotee when you're too much attached to karma or jnana. And I saw for myself when I became a devotee, it was because it was just the right balance was there. Right? Jnana means like philosophical, speculative, or improper philosophy, you know, improper understanding, personalism, all these things. So when you're too much attached to that, you can't become a devotee. You see, so many people, they can't become a devotee because they're too much attached to impersonal philosophy and things like this. And then karma means attachment to sense gratification. If you're too attached to sense gratification, you also can't become a devotee. That's why so many people can't practice Krishna consciousness. They're too attached to sense gratification. So Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur says that the jivas, if they're too attached to karma or jnana, they can't take to bhakti. So you have to have the right balance. Right? Not too much attachment, not too much detachment. So you have to free yourself from these desires. That's what Sankhya is for, to free ourselves from the desire for karma and jnana. And then we can take to bhakti properly. That's why we study these parts of the Bhagavad Gita and we study these parts of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Because when you look at the Bhagavatam, the 10th canto was primarily lila. Right? There wasn't as much philosophy as in previous cantos. But then, now that it's finished, 10th canto, now Krishna is speaking a lot of philosophy again. Why? Because the philosophy makes us detached. And when we're detached, then it's easier to practice bhakti. Right? If we're not detached, then it's hard to practice bhakti. It's hard to practice devotional service. So, any points? Okay. So text 28. Just as the rising sun removes the darkness of the sky, similarly, this scientific knowledge of cosmic annihilation removes all illusory duality from the mind of a serious student. Even if illusion somehow enters his heart, it cannot remain there. Niraj? Sorry. Nandagopal. Sorry.
Just as the brilliant sun removes all darkness from the sky, A clear understanding of the knowledge spoken by Lord Krishna to Uddhava removes all ignorance concocted by the material mind. One will then no longer accept the material body as the self. Even if such illusion temporarily manifests with one's consciousness, it will be driven away by the resurgence of one's spiritual knowledge.
Mm. So, any points there? Narottama Das Thakur says, when we sing in the morning the Guru Puja prayers, when we sing Divya Jnana Ride Prakashito. Prakash means illuminate. Divya Jnana Hridaya, the heart becomes illuminated by spiritual knowledge, transcendental knowledge. Just like we're doing now, we're hearing. We're reading, we're studying, we're hearing transcendental knowledge. So, Divya Gyan, it destroys Maya, illusion, that which is not. We're all attached to Maya. So this spiritual knowledge weakens Maya. Right? It makes us more attached to Krishna. Divya Gyan, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur explains it also destroys duality, which is the same thing, ostensibly. It's the same thing is that duality means the attachment we have to this material world. If you look at all the attachment we have in this material world, it's based on duality, right? Male, female, right? And then all the other dualities which come from that, matter, spirit. You know, the body, everything, it's all duality. Mm-hmm. So Divya Gyan, or spiritual knowledge, frees us from that duality. What's the first thing Krishna teaches? You're not the body. You are spirit. Right? So we have to understand the ultimate duality. What is sat, what is asat? What is reality, what is illusion? The Bhagavatam says in the beginning, this scripture teaches us to define the difference between reality and illusion. That which is temporary, that which is real. Right. So that is the philosophy of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, we need to cultivate this Sankhya. That's why it is there. That's why the Bhagavatam is spoken the way it is spoken. Right? If you study the Bhagavatam, you get to the third canto. Do you remember when we studied canto 3? Is that when you came? You came then, yeah. In Canto 3 you came. Yeah, 2007. So that's when we were studying Canto 3, long time ago. Right? And I remember when we studied it, some of the Matijis said, quickly, just finish it. There's so much philosophy, right? It's all gyan. It's all sankhya. They said, come on, let's just get, you know, because then you get back to fourth canto. The fourth canto opens up with Leela, Dhruva Maharaj. Right? And different Leelas, they manifest. So that there's more relish there. It's easier for many people. But it's interesting. The Bhagavatam is spoken in a particular way. And you have to go through the, categorically, Prabhupada says. You have to go through the different categories. So the philosophy is there for a reason, to breed detachment. And then finally you get to the 10th canto, Krishna gives all the pastimes, and then he goes straight back to philosophy again. Because then Krishna is re-reminding us. Now, there's nothing new in the 11th canto. It's a summary of everything before in the other 10 cantos. So now Krishna is going back and said, remember I said this? Remember I said that? Remember this was discussed in the different cantos? You have to meditate on that. So, by studying Gyan or Sankhya, you learn to control the mind, overcome the mind, because the mind is very difficult to control. Krishna says, it can be the best friend or the worst enemy. Arjuna says in third chapter, he said, what forces me to act? At that time, Krishna says, calm, lust. But it's a very similar point that he makes in the sixth chapter. And Krishna says it can be your best friend or your worst enemy. Now, one thing I've noticed that over many years of counseling and guiding devotees, you know, devotees come and they say, oh, Prabhu, can you? One thing I've noticed, and I've mentioned this before, devotees who struggle a lot with their mind, they don't hear and chant enough, they don't read enough. Because if you're reading regularly and you're hearing regularly, your mind's not going to give you so many problems. If you're not doing that, your mind will give you a lot of problems. And I've seen so many devotees, you know, and they say, oh, you know, I'm having this problem. Are you reading? Oh, I'm not reading so well. What do you expect? If you're not reading Prabhupada's books, if you're not hearing regularly, if you're not studying, then how? Your mind will give you problems. I know for myself, when I'm studying more, then the mind is not so problematic. That's why we need to study this Sankhya, this Gyan, in order to purify the mind. So, and then ultimately, this relieves our suffering. Why are we suffering in this material world? We are suffering in this material world because we forget Krishna. So this philosophy teaches us to remember Krishna. When you remember him, then you don't suffer in the material world. So, any points? Okay. Text 29. Thus I, the perfect seer of everything material and spiritual, have spoken this knowledge of Sankhya, which destroys the illusion of doubt by scientific analysis of creation and annihilation. So, we need to develop what is called Shastra Chakshush. What does Shastra Chakshush mean? Seeing through the eyes of Shastra. Right? This is one of the 12 aims of Shastric study. Right? When we study, we're meant to learn to see the world through the eyes of the Shastra. And what is the Shastra teaching us? This world is temporary. So how are we meant to see it? It is temporary. We should see it like that. We should not become bewildered by this material energy, even though we do. We become bewildered by it. But we should not become bewildered by the material energy. We should see it as what it is. It's simply Maya. It is simply illusion. We should not become overly attached. So I'll stop there. Are there any questions, any comments? Okay, we'll see you tomorrow. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Jai.